Welcome in, everybody. It's the Locked On Eagles podcast. Louis DiBiase here joining you, as always, alongside my co-host, Gino Camilleri. Welcome, everybody, to the show. It's the Wednesday edition, May 15th. Before you know it, guys, football season will be here. We are right around the corner. I'm getting that little itch for fantasy football, too, because we got, sure, you know, the summer coming up, and that's a big time for everybody to get their drafts in, especially now that the NFL draft is over. Everybody knows where everybody is. They can start targeting guys like my boy Josh Jacobs, who I've got something in the works for right now. I told them, if the Eagles don't get him, I'm going to make sure I get him for my squad, and I got a big trade cooking up. And it has to do with Le'Veon Bell, dude, because we're going to get into it here in the first segment. So what we're going to do today on the show, I want to rank the strengths of the Eagles by position, kind of see, because this team, really the theme of Eagles Twitter last week was, after they signed Wiz back, to just continue to add more depth up front on the offensive line, we started looking at it, and we've been saying it for months, me and you, but a lot of other people I saw started to talk about, wow, like this team is as loaded as the 2017 Super Bowl roster, and if not deeper. So I want to get into today just kind of talking about, like, how strong, you know, what are the strongest positions, what is the weakest, if there really even is one. So that's what we're getting into today. But we have some news to get into here with this first segment, Gino. And going back to the Jets, like I kind of hinted at, Le'Veon Bell, a guy that I've had in fantasy football for like 8 years now. I've kept him since he was a rookie. Not feeling good about his stock with the Jets right now. Adam Gase said that, or apparently there was a rumor that Adam Gase did not want to pay Le'Veon. And then the whole, I don't know what's happening with the Jets right now. Now they're looking for another general manager, and it appears that Gase wants Joe Douglas to be their next GM. But, I mean, right, dude, like, this has been inevitable.
Yeah, it's one of those things that it was not a matter of when, but, or not a matter of if, but when. And I think, honestly, they've been playing on borrowed time with Joe Douglas. You look around the NFL right now, and how many GMs would you say deserve to be in their position? I mean, maybe 20? I'd say there's probably 10 teams that really don't have a clue what's going on right now. Like, the Raiders are in complete disarray. Jason Light is just completely destroying the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. They had a very talented roster the last couple seasons, just haven't been able to put it together. The Giants are a disaster. I mean, you can just go on and on. Joe Douglas deserves to have a job. With his track record, with his ability to draft as well as he can, and his forward-thinking approach, learning behind Howie Roseman and Jeffrey Lurie, an owner who gives 100% to his organization, Joe Douglas is more than qualified to take on the position of general manager of any given franchise. And like I said, I think he's on borrowed time. I thought 2 seasons was a lot to get out of him. I think this third draft was even more than I expected, which is great because I think you've seen leaps and bounds in the way that Howie Roseman tends to draft, how he values late round draft picks, trading them away for veterans, how he values compensatory draft picks. I think a lot of that had to do with Joe Douglas, and a lot of the quote new Howie Roseman came from learning from Joe Douglas. And if you think about the most successful people in business and most successful people in politics and every other facet, they bring in people around them that question their mentality. And that's exactly what Howie Roseman did bringing in Joe Douglas. He always had Andy Reid there, who was like a yes man to him. Like, they were always on the same page. They've been in the organization together forever. Chip Kelly and him butted heads, but then Joe Douglas came in and constructively criticized how Howie Roseman drafted and taught him his ways, and how he did the same with Joe. And they've created this cohesive unit that, man, any VP of player personnel with Joe Douglas's stature, you're playing with house money, because the guy has just killed it the last couple seasons. It's a shock to me that he hasn't gotten a GM position yet. And I mean, thanks to him, we have some great players in this organization.
Yeah, it was awesome to milk just another draft class out of him. And I agree with you. I think it was a perfect balance with what Howie's strengths are, what Douglas's strengths are, more of the X's and O's kind of guy. I mean, as much as I couldn't stand Chip Kelly that final 2015 season, it was funny, like, him calling Howie Roseman a cap guy. While that, I mean, it was kind of true, it is also correct, though, that Douglas really made Howie Roseman, I think, a better talent evaluator. But at the same mm-hmm. time, I think Douglas is going to have success wherever he goes as a general manager, because I think he learned a ton from Howie Roseman about the salary cap, how to maneuver it, how to continue to add talent, even when everybody else on the outside thinks you can't add any more to your roster based on your money situation. I think, again, with like compensatory picks, I think they've been so open to experimenting and to trying to add talent in so many different ways that they have just really helped each other grow. When you're right, Andy Reid and Howie kind of always on the same page, kind of had just one mindset, never tried a whole lot of stuff, kind of continued to just go with one way. And then it was kind of the complete opposite with Chip Kelly and Howie. Chip Kelly really didn't want to take anything from Howie Roseman except for his salary cap kind of stuff. And now I think it was a perfect balance. But, you know, I think even Jeffrey Lurie said it in March. When you're this good as a team, you got to be prepared to lose executive, right? I mean, this is a copycat.
Oh, absolutely.
League. You see it even with coaching trees, right? People mm-hmm. are trying to grab any single person that has touched Sean McVay. It's why Cliff Kingsbury got a job with the Arizona Cardinals, and I think it's the same thing with front offices. They see how successful the Eagles have been the past couple of years and how they've added talent in so many different venues, and I think that's why they want Joe Douglas. I think that'll continue to happen.
Yeah, and it's just a testament to see the way that the NFL is moving, and a fact that a team that the last three seasons has been competitive, they have a Super Bowl victory, were basically a catch or two away from going to the NFC Championship last season. The fact that he was still in this draft, still around to help get his scouts together, which is another problem that this team is going to face if he leaves, is that he will probably bring a big chunk of that scouting staff with him.
Yeah, that's right.
But now every team is poaching successful organizations. You look at Sean McVay. If you have even had a cup of coffee with him, you're going to get an interview. And I think Howie Roseman is going to start to be in that category for executives. If you've been in the building with Howie, if you've been around the Eagles organization, you're going to start to see more and more of these guys develop and be a stepping stone towards getting a GM job, much like Joe Douglas. And if Joe Douglas leaves, when he leaves, of course, I fully expect them to bring in another very capable VP of player personnel, whether it be from with inside the building or another outside mind. It could be a forward-thinking college coach. It could be an executive. Look at what the Buffalo Sabres did. They just hired a guy. I know we're talking NHL, but they just hired a guy that was managing the chairman of a Premier League soccer club for the last 5 years. Teams are evolving and doing these outside-the-box thinking mentalities. Who knows where they can go with their next step? But to be around Howie Roseman for as long as he has, to have had the track record in drafting as well as he's done in three very good organizations that have drafted exceptionally strong over the past decade, Baltimore Ravens, it speaks to themselves. The last couple draft classes that Chicago had while Joe was there were very good if you go back and look. And then with Howie, it speaks for itself what he's done these last couple years. So I fully expect Joe to be gone. I'm not necessarily sure if it would be for the Jets because, hey, man, like you said, that team's kind of in disarray. Like, who knows if Adam Gase is just a GM killer? Like, who knows what's going on with him? I don't think it would be an ideal fit for Joe because he likes a little more structure. Like, you look at Baltimore, a very structure-oriented organization. Same with Chicago, even though they were out of disarray a couple seasons before getting Trubisky, before bringing in Khalil Mack. But I fully expect Joe has his time has run out in Philly, but not for a bad reason. He is, the way I look at players has changed a lot since Joe Douglas has came to Philadelphia. Just the way athletically they look at players, just the way they draft players at the Senior Bowl, just a lot of different things Joe Douglas has brought in that you wouldn't have saw prior to 2015 when he ended up coming here. And I think that's great. He put this organization in a much better place than it was when he arrived.
100% agree with you there. Looks like he'll, I don't know, with Gase really pushing that, I think that he's going to, I don't know, but again, it's a weird dynamic there. Gase didn't really want Le'Veon, which I think is mm-hmm. definitely evident because you look at the way he used Kenyon Drake last year in Miami. He's someone that doesn't really probably want a workhorse, and he didn't want to pay Le'Veon Bell. But then I don't know what their direction is, so they didn't really listen to Gase with that. He also didn't like the C.J. Mosley contract, but now mm-hmm. you get rid of the GM. Now what, you're going to go with who Gase wants as a general manager after you already made moves against? I don't know. It's just it's kind of a weird situation with New York. It always is with Adam Gase, really, in general. And apparently Daniel Jeremiah is also somebody in the hunt for a key front office position with New York, and that's according to Adam Schefter. So, hey, Daniel Jeremiah and Joe Douglas in the front office would be a pretty solid 1-2 punch for the Jets. Some other news to get into here before we get into our rankings of the strongest positions to the weakest for the Philadelphia Eagles. According to Adam Schefter, the Eagles and Carson Wentz have begun contract talks. Gino, he thinks they're going to get a deal done before 2019. They have $21 million in cap space right now. I always was of the belief that the Eagles were going to be the ones that wanted to be more patient with it, kind of mm-hmm. milk this rookie contract as much as possible, make sure this back injury, which sometimes can never fully heal, make sure that it's fully in his past, that he can get to 100% by the time training camp rolls around. We'll see what happens June 11th when he's back on the field. He's been on the field in phase two, but Doug Peterson didn't really want to go into detail, meaning he probably isn't really fully recovered. But, you know, Howie Roseman's been talking about it all offseason, that he wants to extend Carson Wentz. I thought it was kind of just talk to say that he wants him to be here long term, but at the same time, that doesn't mean they're going to get a deal done right now. It appears that maybe Carson Wentz is the one that wants to wait, and I get that. I mean, he's probably at his lowest value right now that he would be, as opposed to going in 2019, betting on himself, having the type of year that we're predicting he's going to have with all these weapons, and then get that mega contract in the 2020 offseason. I could see that, but they both sides appear to be talking, and if it gets done before 2019, I think that's fine. They have the space to do it, and once again, I'm not concerned to the point where I don't think Carson Wentz will be here for the next decade. So if they sign the contract right now, I trust Howie with the cap. I don't know how they'll do it money-wise. I'm sure maybe some of it will be front-loaded with all the space they have right now. Not sure, but I'm excited about the fact that they're going to probably get this deal done soon.
Yeah, and I think it's an exciting thing to happen because for once you're going to have solidity at that position, something that you haven't had since Donovan's last contract. It's very good to see. I know Zach Ertz, who is somebody that has been a big proponent of staying with the same quarterback because he was – unfortunate to have a few that bounced around his first couple years in the league. It's a good thing for everybody involved. It's a good precedent to set for the organization. It's good to have your management on the same page with choosing that guy. They all went out. They were all in agreement to go get him as their guy. People respect him in that building. People respect him in the city of Philadelphia. I want to get that deal done as soon as possible. I know I'm going to kind of go back revisionist history here because I wasn't as apt to think this way a couple months ago, but now I think it could be ideal to get it done because of the fact that Jerry Jones is going to overpay for Dak Prescott, and I really think it could hurt us. I think if you get that deal done before Dak's deal is done, it's going to be good because I think Dak's deal is the floor for a Carson Wentz contract, and it can only go up above that based on success, based on statistics, based on overall understanding of the quarterback position. Carson Wentz is going to make more money than him. But you look right now, you have the cap space. So why the hell not? Like, Howie is better than anybody at maneuvering the cap. We came into this offseason questioning where are we going to get cap space from, and now we're talking about extending our franchise quarterback. I think if you have the luxury to do so, if you don't plan on going and getting any more high-profile free agents, which I don't expect them to do, they've been very low-key, very bargain bin-esque the last couple seasons, go sign your guy. I mean, he's going to be there for the long haul. We know he's going to be there for the long haul. They've made it known that he's going to be there for the long haul. Go sign him. I fully expect him to be here the next 12 years. Get him on a contract now. That means this contract will run out sooner than the next time you're going to have to run him up, and inflation's going to be even crazier then. So just thinking in foresight, it would be great to get that deal done now before Dak is signed, before more quarterbacks continue to reset the market, because it's only going to get pricier as time goes forward.
Yeah, the reason I wanted to wait at first was just because of the back, but I'm feeling pretty confident about the injury. If they want to get the deal done now, that means they probably think he should be ready to go by the start of the summer, which is definitely pretty positive, and it's definitely encouraging to hear. Man, if I'm the Rams, though, right now, I am rushing to get that Jared Goff deal done.
Yeah, there's another one. Yep.
they have the same agent too, Wentz and Goff. Mm-hmm. And I think the agents are really going to try to compare that. If Wentz gets a deal done first, they're going to be like, all right, unless you think Jared Goff isn't better than Carson Wentz, you, the guy you chose over Carson Wentz, let's get this deal done where he's making more money than Carson Wentz. So if I'm the Rams right now, I'm trying to get ahead of this and try to control it, much like you're talking about with Wentz and Dak. If I'm the Rams, I'm trying to do the same thing. The tough part for the Rams, I'm sure, is once again, the agents here between Carson Wentz and Jared Goff, the same agency, if I were them, I would want to get the Wentz deal done first. So I could see maybe them telling Goff, like, strategically, like, hey, let's wait until Carson gets this deal in Dak, mm-hmm. and then we kind of force the Rams' hand to pay you about as much, if not more. And that'll be an interesting situation, because I don't think Jared Goff or Dak Prescott should make the amount of money that Carson Wentz will make. But yeah, once again, $21 million in space. If they're confident in his back, then I'm feeling a lot better about the situation. And, if you know, it seems like this might actually get done before the season starts, as Adam Schefter believes it will be by the 2019 season. Let's take a quick break here on the Locked On Eagles podcast. When me and Gino come back, we will get into the strongest position to the weakest on the Eagles. I think this is going to be a fun exercise for Eagles fans out there, because if you haven't realized already, even when we get down to that final position, you're going to be like, ah, even the weakest position, I don't know, man. They got some playmakers. That's coming up next right here on the Locked On Eagles podcast. And, guys, we're sponsored today by ZipRecruiter. Hiring used to be really hard. Multiple job sites, stacks of resumes, a confusing review process. But today, hiring can be easy, and you only have to go to one place to get it done. It's ZipRecruiter.com. And at ZipRecruiter.com/lockdown, they send your jobs to over 100 of the web's leading job boards. But they don't stop there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and invite them to apply to your job. As applications come in, ZipRecruiter analyzes each one and spotlights the top candidates so you never miss a great match. It's so effective that 80% of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within the first day. That's right, 80% within the first day. And right now, our listeners at Locked On Eagles can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address. It's ZipRecruiter.com/lockdown, LOCKEDON. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. We thank them for the Locked On Eagles podcast today. All right, everybody, welcome back to the Locked On Eagles podcast. Louis DiBiase and Gino Camilleri. So, you know, before the break, we kind of were getting into some of the newsworthy parts of the week for the Eagles, and there's a lot of stuff. Carson Wentz, the deal could get done before we know it, before the regular season even starts, which would be awesome to me, because it really, again, is telling that they believe that Wentz will be healthy pretty soon, I would say, because if you think that this could be something that really seeps into the late in the summer, then once again, I thought the past couple of months they would kind of hold off on that. But there's that, and also Joe Douglas could become the next general manager of the New York Jets. There's, you know, the more and more we get further into the summer, we're going to get more and more newsworthy stuff to talk about. And before you know it, like Gino said, we'll be talking about training camp, battles, preseason. Cannot wait to get the regular season up and going with how good this Eagles roster looks on paper. Of course, it is on paper. 2017, they looked almost, I mean, pretty much just as good, but people are saying now, I mean, we've been saying it for the past couple months, that this team is as talented, if not even deeper, than the past couple of years. 2018, I mean, last year's Eagles team was, I mean, just as good. It was pretty much the same roster. Mm-hmm. It was just, you know, health, just absolutely, it was non-existent. Injuries obliterated that roster until down the stretch. But I want to get into this fun exercise now, because me and you talked about it a lot in the Locked On the Mock shows and throughout the draft process, just how little holes the Eagles have on this roster. But now I want to get into, like, what do we think are the strongest positions? If you, Gino, off the top of your head right now, would choose one position to say that is like the gold mine for the Eagles roster right now, which is what position is it?
Yeah, so as we approach OTA workouts, which are coming up May 21st through the 23rd, May 28th, May 30th through the 31st, and June 3rd through 6th, until they officially open up a mandatory minicamp on June 11th through the 13th. Quick callback to how we opened the segment. We forgot to mention those days, but now you have them all. So once OTAs come, once training camp comes, I think there's one unit that just above and beyond everybody is more talented on paper on a very talented team than any other position. And I think it's far and away offensive line.
I think, agree with you. I had them as 1-2. I was hoping you'd say that.
I think what they have done at that position just it truly amazes me, because you look around the NFL, how many teams struggle for talent at all three of those key positions on the line, both at center, at the both guard positions, and both tackle positions. You look at this Philadelphia Eagles team, you could start guys on their third string. It's truly remarkable. You're looking here right now, your third string left tackle is Jordan Mailata. On other teams, he would be able to compete for a job. I mean, now you have Andre Diller there as the heir apparent. You bring back Stefan Wisniewski to be your backup guard. You have Isaac Seumalo, Brandon Brooks, Lane Johnson, a Super Bowl-winning Halapulivahti Vaitai. Undrafted free agents like Ryan Bates. I just think the collection of talent they have been able to accumulate at three positions that are so badly malnourished in the NFL. The teams are just struggling and overdrafting tackles and guards and centers. Look at Titus Howard. As much as we thought he was a great talent, he was drafted in the first round. The Eagles have such an accumulation of very good to elite talent to some average guys on that team, but their depth is just something that we're going to be sitting probably November, December, and saying, man, I am glad this is 2019 and they have as much depth as they do, because in 2018 we were struggling when we were starting to get hurt, when you had to move guys around. They were doing that Chance Warmack thing, what was that, in 2017, where they were rotating their guards. Like, yikes, you don't want to see stuff like that happen. Now you have solidarity all the way along the line. You have proven backup veterans and guys like Steph Wisniewski and Halapulivahti Vaitai that can come in. You have guys that are very high in the building like Matt Pryor's, like Jordan Mailata's. You have the true, tried and true rookie that was your number one pick in Andre Dillard. Lou, this could be the best offensive line collection of talent-wise that has ever come through the doors in the NFL and especially in Philadelphia.
I just look at what their second team, you talked about building like a starting lineup of their backups. I mean, you could have realistically an offensive line. I could see this. I mean, put this on the Arizona Cardinals in front of Kyler Murray, and I think they're almost better off. Andre Dillard at left tackle. You put, you know, Jordan Mailata at guard. Wiz can play center. You have Pryor as well. You still have Pryor coming out of TCU his second year. I think he's going to take another big step, a versatile player.
Really high on him.
Yeah, he can play tackle and guard, and you got Big V. You could put it right tackle. I mean, that's a starting offensive line that Wyatt would probably struggle a good amount. There is a lot of talent there, and that's all of your backups. So, you know, bringing back Wiz just continued to add to that, whereas now that doesn't force you to maybe change multiple guys at their positions on the offensive line. Now you're not going to be like, all right, now we have to play Big V at guard if Seumalo went down, or if Seumalo had to play center, we'd have to move him in there, or Big V. Now it's like, no, they still have Wiz, who was a starting guard on the Super Bowl roster, and then you have all these young guys to develop, and they can play around the line. If there is a boatload of injuries, which, knock on wood, that doesn't happen, kind of like it did at almost every position in 2018, but I put offensive line as well at one. I just kind of want to compare mine to yours. At number two, who did you have? What position?
Well, since I went two, or I went one first, you go two first.
I put defensive line. I didn't want to put.
Okay, so you're
going to
go do the total
end.
The total line.
Yeah, I think it's kind of the same thing as offensive line. I would put. I want to combine the tackles and the ends, because you put. To me, right now, there's a lot of people concerned with like who's going to be the third and fourth defensive end. And I understand that people are used to this Eagles team being four deep. And I know that Jim Schwartz loves to rotate his pass rushers. They've had, you know, Michael Bennett, Chris Long, Brandon Graham, Derek Barnett, Vinny Curry, all of these guys the past couple of years. But really, you look across the league, though, how many other teams can you say that's a destructive defensive line, but then you say, well, yeah, but they don't have a third or fourth defensive end? I mean, their starters right now on the defensive line are elite. Derek Barnett proved to me that he can make plays, and I think I really liked where he was going with that second year last year before he got hurt. It's a damn shame that he got injured, because I thought he was their most efficient edge rusher at the start of the season. You have him on the edge. I think he's going to take a big step in his third year. You have Malik Jackson, who, outside of Fletcher
Super
Cox,
Bowl winning champion, Malik Jackson.
Outside of Fletcher Cox, I mean, I feel like Malik Jackson's the best pass-rushing interior defensive lineman you've had in a long time, probably since the 90s. So you add that to Fletcher Cox, one of the top four defensive linemen in the league, and Brandon Graham. You bring back Vinnie Curry. I know that it's going to suck that Chris Long probably won't be back and Michael Bennett's in New England, but hey, you invested a fourth-round pick in both Josh Sweat and Sharif Miller. They have enough upside where I'm comfortable with those guys maybe rotating or seeing who the hot hand is as that fourth pass rusher on the edge, because really, they're going to be, what, the fifth or sixth option on the defensive line to get to the quarterback, so I think it's still a huge strength. I can count maybe one or two teams on my hand that have a better situation than the Eagles do up front.
Yeah, I really think it's going to be tough to find a team that competes with them defensive line-wise. I'd say Jacksonville probably is a close, very, very close second, if not a little better.
Let's throw Tim Jernigan in there, too.
I think the thing that sets them apart from everybody else, much like the offensive line, is just the overall depth and the skill that you have at your depth positions. Right now, you know who you're starting four are. But look at you talk about, Lou, the second string offensive lineman being a starting offensive line around the NFL. Their second string defensive line is for sure a starting defensive line around the NFL. You're going to throw out there Vinnie Curry, who has started, Tim Jernigan, who has started, Hassan Ridgeway or Trayvon Hester, take your pick. Both, I mean, they have a high regard for Ridgeway. They brought him in for a reason. Hester graded out very, very well last year. And then take your pick of either Josh Sweat or Sharif Miller. I think, realistically, those guys could play, could start on other teams around the NFL. Sharif Miller, maybe not as much so, or Hassan Ridgeway. But they have trust in those guys. There's a reason they brought them in. They've played big roles elsewhere. Vinnie Curry was on the Super Bowl team. Tim Jernigan, he was a starter in Philly just last season. You have so much depth and players that are going to contribute at those depth positions. And the one thing that people get way too hung up on is that fourth defensive end position. And frankly, it doesn't really matter, in my opinion. I mean, it does. They love to rotate bodies. But look at – you could find one halfway through the season. Look at how many times veteran pass rushers get let go halfway through the season. Bruce Irvin all of a sudden becomes available halfway through the year, and Atlanta gets a pass rusher, which they so badly need. We talk about the Dwight Freeney role. There are teams that are going to let these guys get to free agency. They're going to let them hit the market. And when the Eagles are sitting there, what, 6-3, or they're 7-2, and a guy wants to come win a championship, he's like, okay, maybe I only have a couple seasons left, much like a Chris Long did, much like a Dwight Freeney did, much like a lot of these veteran pass rushers do that can contribute on third downs, they're going to want to come to a team like Philadelphia. So don't get so hung up on it, because they still have guys like Josh Sweat and Sharif Miller, which they trusted, which they invested fourth-round draft picks in, to develop to be a potential starting defensive end. It's just mind-boggling how much talent they have there. And if I knew before this that we were going to combine the defensive end and defensive tackle positions, I would have by far and away put that ahead of offensive line, because you're looking here, Bruce Hector, Trayvon Hester, Josh Sweat or Sharif Miller, Joe Osment, like these guys, even Deshaun Hall had some impact plays last year. These are your third and fourth position players on your depth chart, Lou. This is just crazy. They're going to be so fresh going down the line as long as these guys stay healthy that you should – by 100% on paper, be as good as you were in 2017, if not better.
Yeah, I just don't really care that much that they don't really have a locked-in defensive end four, because that was never something.
Isn't that crazy that is like our big hang-up right now?
Yeah,
like
it is
defensive
pretty awesome.
End four.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome because it was never a problem before. People were not concerned about who the Eagles – it's more of an emphasis because, again, Schwartz does like to rotate. But you look across the board at past elite defensive lines. How many of those teams had four defensive ends that were dominant? It doesn't take four. They have two, to me, that are going to be at the top of the league. You have a proven third guy in Vinnie Curry that, again, like you said, two of the backups right now were starters on the Super Bowl team, Curry and Jernigan. So, and you can't not count Malik Jackson in this. I know they're going to lose Long, and they didn't really replace Bennett, although Barnett is kind of that now third guy, and Curry is kind of that replacement, those two right there. But then you brought in Malik Jackson, who, like Howie Roseman said a couple of weeks ago on the radio, now they don't have to move as many edge guys inside, because Malik Jackson's someone you're not going to always want to take off on third down situations. So I put defensive line second. What do you have at three?
Yeah, so at three, I think it's so close right now in my eyes. Actually, no. I'm going to go threes tight end, and then I'll split the difference on the next two. But tight end, I think right now you have the best duo in the NFL. It's going to be hard to convince me otherwise. I think Dallas is going to have a really big breakout season. I think teams are going to focus more on Ertz, and I think it's going to open up a lot of the offense for Dallas Goedert to get involved. They said they were going to make it an offseason project to interject 12 personnel more into this playbook, and I think that is music to every Philadelphia Eagles fan's ears, because we were pounding. Many of us, I wouldn't consider us beat writers, but I would say Eagles Twitter media would, we were all pounding for 12 personnel. I know the Kiss and Solek show did a very good job of putting pen to paper with statistics that supported that knowledge. And I think, frankly, you are going to be have the ability to create matchups with Dallas Goedert, with Zach Ertz, even bring in a Super Bowl champ in Richard Rodgers. Actually, no. Was he on that Super Bowl team when Green Bay won? I'm not 1,000% sure.
I think that was JerMichael Finley.
Yes. Okay. Sorry about that. But you have Richard Rodgers, who has played big minutes in a Green Bay offense, contributed a little bit for this Eagles team, even a Josh Perkins or a Will Tye. You have depth at that position, too, and I think it wouldn't be out of the equation to bring in another blocking tight end if one of these guys doesn't develop like you had hoped so. But I think right now, offensively, you have two guys that are going to be absolute matchup nightmares for opposing defenses, because it's inevitable that Dallas Goedert is going to get lined up on an off-ball linebacker and absolutely take him to school at some point during the season.
Yeah, it's awesome the amount of optionality they have with mismatches on offense. I kind of went back and forth with this list, because you can go with depth. That's why you put someone higher. That's why I put offensive line. But I think it was the combination of the elite talent they have with their starters and at the same time all the depth they have. Same with the defensive line. At three, I put quarterback just because of Carson Wentz's impact, that I think if he is healthy, he's going to be one of the best players in football. So I know while Cody Kessler they brought in to compete with Nate Sudfeld, I still think Sudfeld's going to end up winning that job. It's not the strongest. It's not what it was with Nick Foles as your backup quarterback. But if Carson Wentz is what we think he's going to be, if he's not playing on a fractured back, he's showed he's one of the best quarterbacks in the league. So for me, I got to put him at three there, just based on it's Wentz more so than the quarterback position.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, when you have just an outlier of talent like Carson Wentz's as compared to most other positions, because we all know, and the NFL has proven that quarterback is the most important position, you have a luxury of having a bona fide top 15 quarterback, and in my opinion, an easily arguable top 10 quarterback right now. And I think Nate Sudfeld, he shows some promise. Like you said, it isn't as high as what I would have had it last year with Nick Foles in the building, but at any given time, if you look around this depth chart, and I'm going to pull out another Scouting Academy quote from Dan Hatman. He always put players into three categories. You can win because of, you can win with, and you can win in spite of. You look around this roster, I think maybe there's 5-6 players you're going to win because of. Carson Wentz automatically falls into that category. Yeah.
I think that's a really good quote, especially when you're comparing him to like other, like for me, like that's a guy you're paying a guy $30+ million because you're winning because of him. And you
exactly.
can win with Jared Goff. You could win with Dak Prescott.
You can win with Nick Foles.
Yeah, you can win with Nick Foles. I think the difference in what makes Wentz and guys like Mahomes stand out is you're winning because of them. I really that's a great quote for that, and that's why I think just his impact alone put him at three for me. At four, I put wide receiver. And you look at them keeping Nelson Aguilar in-house. So now you have Alshon Jeffrey, you have DeSean Jackson, you have Nelson Aguilar, you have J.J. Arcega-Whiteside, you have Matt Collins.
J.J. Arcega-Whiteside. That's what I was singing the day they drafted him. All day.
You got J.J. as your four, and then Matt Collins, if he decides to show up this year and actually be alive, then he'll be your fifth wide receiver. And to me, that's a great situation. J.J. Arcega-Whiteside is your fourth receiver. I would be comfortable right now starting him right away on the outside. So they've come a long way. I thought about maybe like combining them with just pass catchers in general, because you're right, like Goddard and Ertz together, that's going to be, to me, two of the best tight ends in the league. I think Dallas Goedert already next year could be a top 10 tight end in the NFL, and you have both of them on your team with all these wide receivers. But I put wide receiver four just ahead of tight end at five.
Yeah, I'm going to go right with you and say wide receivers for, in my opinion, because we talked about that defensive end four position being like a big hang-up. Fans are like, okay, pass the fourth guy who's like your fifth receiving option. It's like, dude, let them compete. Like, this is the situation you want to be in. The same thing when we get into corners. Like, you finally want to see these guys have to compete for a spot. Make Shelton Gibson go earn his spot on the team. Make Mac Hollins go earn his spot on the team. It's not the days of 2016 when, hey, if you could catch a football, you ever caught a football in your life, you could probably play receiver for the Philadelphia Eagles. Even last season, you're bringing in guys like Mike Wallace. Now you have bona fide players. Your top three guys are one of the best trios in the league. And then you have a J.J. Arcega-Whiteside who you could toss into that mix as well. Now let Shelton Gibson, Braxton Miller, Mac Hollins, Greg Ward, Charles Johnson, the DeAndre Tompkins out of Penn State, let those guys go compete. I want to see a guy earn his way onto this roster. I want to see him be deservingly the fifth passing option. I don't want to see a guy that's like Paul Turner's. It's like, oh, put him on the team just so he's on the team. Like, no, I want a guy that if you need to throw him in there in week one in the season because somebody gets a weird suspension, like, I don't want to have to rely on Josh Perkins again. I don't want to have to rely on these depth pieces that aren't going to contribute. I seriously think one of these guys full well has the ability to come in and play significant minutes as a fifth passing option because, frankly, you have that competition now and somebody's going to emerge. Shelton Gibson and Mac Hollins are going into their third year. Greg Ward, he's got a sour taste in his mouth getting cut by Philly, goes to the AAF, is pretty successful there, now wants to come back and earn his way onto the squad. Braxton Miller is a guy that the team said could get big slot reps if they move Nelson Agholor out of town. So they fully trust what they have in that building, and I do too, and I can't wait for camp to see that competition and see who that guy is, see who Nate Sudfeld is his favorite target in those second unit reps, see who gets that connection going, and see if in preseason they could come out and show out in those second and third games because they finally need somebody to come out of one of these draft classes, come out as a free agent, as a wide receiver that can play big minutes and play, what, probably 20 snaps? That's what you want out of your wide receiver, five or six? I fully think they have the talent there behind those big four that you, quote, put emphasis on the big four of Alshon, Deshaun, Nelson, and J-Jaw.
I'm nervous for our safety now because you woke up the Paul Turner stands, and now there's a mob outside of the
stadium. Oh, I love Paul Turner myself, but arguably didn't have much competition for that spot.
But yeah, I had wide receiver at four. You talked about who Nate Sudfeld's favorite guy is going to be. I'm fascinated to see who Carson Wentz. I mean, he has a rapport with Alshon and with Nelson Agholor when he's healthy. I thought last year when that back injury really happened, I think that's when he relied more on Zach Ertz across the middle.
Mm-hmm.
But he's proven that him and Nelson Agholor are playing street ball together. When the structure breaks down and the play breaks down, you know, he's one of his favorite guys to go to down the field. I think he's going to love clicking with DeSean Jackson. We're definitely going to do a stat prediction podcast throughout the summer. So, and we'll just kind of see.
We did that last year. We never went back. Yeah. I don't think we ever went back and looked.
We'll have to go back and find out, but it's going to be even more fun this year because Wentz has you add another.
And now we
could
get
weapons.
Really crazy with some fantasy numbers with this season because I truly expect DeSean to put up some big numbers. I fully expect even J-Jaw to get a ton of reps.
I think Arcega-Whiteside could really have like a Goddard-like rookie year where maybe he's not getting a crazy amount of yards and receptions, but if he gives you like if he adds five touchdowns on the year, I wouldn't bat an eye.
No, I even think he could add more than that, and I think he's going to add an element downfield that we weren't expecting out of him. And I go back to Dallas Goedert being a chess piece. Lou, if you go empty backfield, who is going to defend this team?
There's not a team in the league.
I'm not just being a homer. On paper, just take people's heights, take people's weights. You cannot match up with this Philadelphia Eagles team if they toss out two of the biggest tight ends in the league, two of the best tight ends in the league, Alshon Jeffrey, DeSean Jackson, and J.J. Arcega-Whiteside or Nelson Agholor, either or. What slot receiver is going to be if you toss J-Jaw in the slot or you toss DeSean in the slot? He's going to burn them out of their shoes. You're going to get matched up on linebackers. It's going to be a chess game while everybody else around the league is playing checkers.
So I had tight end at five. What would you have at five here? To me, here's how
I have to say corner. I got to say corner here.
Yeah, I had them coming up right next, so I'm with you. They're deep. Once again, I think they're too deep. But, yeah, corner, they have six options right now that have all started for this team.
Yeah, and the thing with them is I can't put them as high as I put, like, a defensive line or a defensive tech or an offensive line or wide receiver because they don't have the guys that have proven it. Like, Darby, right. He's probably the most proven, I would say, out of them. And even still, you don't know what he would have been down the road if he didn't get hurt last season. He has injury concerns. Jalen Mills still isn't 100% healthy. Sidney Jones is a question mark. There's just a lot of question marks there. But all in all, they have the talent. Like, they just have to prove it. And much like I talked about one of those wide receivers earning their way onto the squad, one of these corners has to come out and take that position from Jalen Mills. Because, frankly, I don't think it's Jalen Mills' position to have. Like, I don't think he did enough for me last season to say he is the guy. Yes, he won a Super Bowl, but much like wide receiver a couple years ago, they didn't have too much at corner. And we were saying, draft a corner, draft a corner, draft a corner. And now we're like, no, don't draft a corner because we have so many corners. Now these corners that we wanted to ship out of town to draft more of these guys and just have this vicious cycle, they have to develop. And we're right there. They're right on the cusp. I hope Sidney Jones comes back 5 pounds heavier. I hope Rasul Douglas has a chance to compete. I hope Craven LeBlanc still plays with that chip on their shoulder. Because all of those guys have the talent to start. All of them deserve playing time. Jalen Mills, I want to see him take a step, and I want Darby to come in and be that true number one. It's just, can they do it this year? I think it's a big boom or bust position for this team that can once again make or break them.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, again, it's not, they don't have any proven stud there quite yet, although they have a lot of upside, they have a lot of promise there. But I think when you talk about depth, I think only the offensive and defensive lines have more options than corner. And I think that's a good thing, though, because last year you lost your top five and you had to end up playing Chandon Sullivan. I never want to hear the name Chandon Sullivan again or Devontae.
My friend actually texted me, who's a Packers fan, when they signed him. He's like, what do you think of Chandon Sullivan? I go, if you like a fifth cornerback, he's your guy.
Yeah,
because that's
absolutely
what he is.
So I put corner at six. I think, once again, I'm with you. I like the way you put it. They don't have any proven studs yet, although I think a lot of them will eventually become that if Jim Schwartz lets them become that. But once again, though, they don't have the elite players like the offensive line does, the defensive line, quarterback with Wentz, wide receiver, tight end. So I think corner to me is ahead of safety, I think running back and linebacker. But outside of that, I think they're right more towards the end of the list.
Yeah, I totally agree. The only reason I put them ahead of safety is because I think there's a lot more young potential on this team that can come out and contribute. Safety, you're relying, yes,
it's
they have
really
very,
guys,
very
right?
good players in Malcolm Jenkins and Rodney McLeod, but yeah, you're relying on Andrew Sendejo, Blake Countess. I got to hop into his film room. I promised I would. I got to see what he can do at the free safety position. I mean, you don't really have much there. We would have loved to see them bring in one. You know how much we were pounding the table for Adderley, CGJ. We're not going to bring back bad memories because we didn't walk away with any of them. But I think a good thing with this position is, I'm not going to put it into our rankings, but they cross-train their guys. I think you're going to see some of these corners, Avante Maddox, for example, get some safety minutes. I think you're not just going to have your three safeties like they did last year. I think you're going to see a lot more versatility, a lot more guys moving around. But on paper, you're looking at an elderly Malcolm Jenkins who's getting up there. He's still a very good player. Andrew Sendejo, he's starting to get onto his last leg. Gives you more than Corey Graham is going to give you as a third safety. And then Rodney McLeod coming off an injury. I still think they're going to be big parts of this team, but I just have to put them down because, man, if one of those guys gets hurt, you're really screwed. If two of them gets hurt, whew, man, I don't even want to know what's going to happen.
Yeah, I think, and I don't even know if Sendejo is going to make the roster really when it comes to the compensatory pick, because I think with Jordan Matthews sticking, they got to get that fourth, and I think the only way to do that right mm-hmm. now is by cutting Sendejo, which I'm fine with. I mean, I like Countess, and I think Trey Sullivan and him can, with the other guys, if you allow these corners to also play safety, I think you have enough options there. But I think that's why I'm going to combine secondary in general and really say they're at six here, just because I think with corner, it's kind of the opposite of safety, where safety, you have those top two studs, but then you don't have six guys behind them. Much like at corner, you have your six deep.
Yeah, totally agree. And like I said, I would love to have a young guy in there to develop behind them. Maybe they get lucky and hit on an undrafted free agent. I'm not going to hold my breath on it. But, yeah, right now you hope and cross your fingers Rodney McLeod does not go out again, because that killed this team. I don't want to see Trey Sullivan taking snaps. DeAndre Hall, they traded a draft pick for him. Do they even trust him to play? Who knows? But, yeah, Countess, I mean, he's going to give you speed back there. He's more like a Chris Maragos, like a guy you really don't want to see out there. But if he has to be out there, he's going to help the team a little bit. I mean, he's going to be one of those you can win in spite of type players on the defense. But, yeah, all in all, I just think secondary, you're in a lot better position than you were to last year, because I think you have more depth at corner, and I think that opens up some versatility with safety. But still, they're towards the bottom of the list, in my opinion.
So at 7 and 8, I had running back and linebacker. I think that's the last two positions you have as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's a pretty good list. I mean, running back, what do you like better? 2017, Jay Ajayi, LeGarrette Blount, Corey Clement, or Miles Sanders, Jordan Howard, Corey Clement? What do you think is a better trio?
I'll tell you after the trade deadline if they trade for another running back. I'm kidding. No, I mean, on paper, I really was a fan of the way LeGarrette Blount was running in 2017, even before that. I thought he added a really good element to this team. I thought Clement, you really got lightning in a bottle with him that season. You hope he comes back, but he really hit that rookie season hard. Jay Ajayi, he had that chip on his shoulder, was playing for it all.
Mr. Efficient.
He really was, but I think collectively, I really, really like that 2017 unit, but much like the corner position, I really think this is another boom or bust position. Like, I think realistically, Miles Sanders could come out there and be a very versatile piece that you put all over the offense. He's going to carry the ball. Jordan Howard's very reliable. Corey Clement, you hope he gets back to his skill, but at the same time, Corey Clement could be 2018 Corey Clement, or even worse for all we know. Jordan Howard can continue to regress after coming off of three very good seasons. Miles Sanders could be a first-year bust. Maybe not a bust down the road, but in his first year struggles to get acclimated. So right now I'm going to go with that 2017 team, but I really like what they have in that locker room right now. It's much more versatile than what they were offering at the beginning of 2018, so I'm very happy in that regard. But yeah, man, it's going to be a toss-up to see what they can do. Much like linebacker, you have a lot of question marks. But overall, skill set wise, I think running back, you're much better off than you are sitting at linebacker right now. But I completely forgot about Zach Brown being on the team, so that I might have to rethink that. But yeah, I think linebacker, you just got too deep there. Maybe LJ Fort hits. You don't really know what they're going to do with Nate Gary. You had the two studs. I think Zach Brown is exactly what this team needed, a team that really struggled to tackle a little bit the last two seasons, Lou. I think that's a big downfall for this team the last 2 years. As much as they were a good team of making stops in the red zone, they had a tough time tackling between the 20s the last 2 years, how many big plays they've given up. So I really think that helps them out. Nigel Bradham, you hope he gets back to his 2017 form. Really was up and down in 2018, but all in all, it's a toss-up between those. But on paper, Lou, this team is much better than they were in 2018, much better than they were in 2017. They just got to go out and produce now. Just have to do it on the field.
Yeah, I think Camus, too, you throw in there. It's a fine linebacker core. For a team that doesn't really use the position, I think they're fine at linebacker, too. I think it's the biggest deficiency in the team, but once again, it's not going to be a huge liability because they're not going to use it that much. And just real quick before we wrap up the show and take a break, running back, that question I posed, I'm with you. The only thing, I think it really just all depends on what Miles Sanders is, because I like Jay Ajayi better than I do Jordan Howard as a player if he's healthy. I think Clement, I mean, again, Corey Clement in 2017, I think he'll get back closer to that than what he was in 2018. He did start to really pick it up before he got injured last year. And then to me, it comes down to, is Miles Sanders that do-it-all running back that meets that second-round value that you placed on him? Or does he become just another change-of-pace type running back? Then, to me, 2017 has the edge with Blount, Ajayi, and Clement. But if Miles Sanders becomes that all-around weapon for you, then I like the 2019 version a little bit more. But, yeah, for me, I think our lists are pretty similar. I think overall, though, man, I mean, linebacker's at 8, and I like the 1-2 punch of Nigel Bradham and Zach Brown. Let's take a quick break here. We'll wrap up the show next. Just some final thoughts on this Wednesday edition of Locked On Eagles. All right, guys, wrapping up the show, May 15th, Louis DiBiase, Gino Camilleri. We ranked the strength of the Eagles roster position by position. Hope you enjoyed today's show. If you missed any of our past ones, check them out. Any podcast platform, just tell Siri, just tell Alexa to play Locked On Eagles or on LockedOnEagles.com. But, yeah, Gino, look, this is almost the same roster as 2017. It's pretty much the same as 2018, except you add better receivers, some different running backs, you're deeper. As long as you stay healthy, I think this team is ready to fly next year.
Yeah, man. I think we're sitting much better than we were last year. I mean, you had a lot of things that were up in the air. You had Carson Wentz coming off of that injury, which you do again. But I think you had more time for him to fix an issue that...
This time either.
Yeah, no, you're not going to rush it. You don't have a Nigel Bradham suspension hanging over your head. Brandon Graham isn't coming off of a big surgery. Alshon Jeffrey isn't coming off of a big surgery. It's going to be nice to have a full offseason with a lot of these guys. I don't think they're going to be as celebrating as much as they did in the 2017 going into 2018 offseason because of the Super Bowl. So now I think this team is going to be back to what we saw, back to being the Philadelphia Eagles that dominated their competition in 2017. How many blowouts did we see, Lou? I just think on paper and collectively as a unit, they want to get back to the Mecca. They were so close last year. They tasted it in 2017. Yes, there are a lot of moving pieces, but players are coming here to want to compete. I mean, look at a lot of these signings, like Zach Brown a year, Stefan Wisniewski 1 year. These guys know what is going on in Philadelphia. They have an inclination that this team is not going to be a fringe playoff team. This team is going to be in the playoffs, and they're going to be there in a big fashion for a couple years. And they're making signings, and they're drafting both for now and to succeed in a couple years. And they're set up for success, finally, Lou. I finally look at this team right now and say, find me a hole. I think you had a great tweet yesterday. Find me a hole on this Eagles roster, and I'll show you a liar. Like, because it's so true.
It really is. I think the only way this Eagles team does not exceed expectations next year is if really they defeat themselves, because once again they are
like the dream team. I really 100%. Think it was like the dream team. Like that team, they were entitled. Like they thought they had it all. This team, I think they know that they're not, and they did that last year.
Well, this team's different. Like, they've done it before. Those other guys, uh-huh. I mean, they were all coming in. None of them were Philadelphia Eagles. They didn't have any pride in being Philadelphia Eagles. The scheme was weird with how they used the corners.
They didn't have the Eagles mentality, yeah. Even. No, like, they didn't. These guys coming to Philadelphia, like, they have the Eagles mentality. DeSean Jackson, born and raised, like, Philadelphia. Everybody knew that this was inevitable. It was going to happen before he retired. Zach Brown, who better than the leading tackler from a couple seasons ago to come to a smash-mouth hitting team like Philadelphia?
Malik Jackson. How many big games Malik Jackson played in? I mean, the Super Bowl and the AFC title with Jacksonville, like you just said. I mean, he's a guy that's experienced too.
Yeah, all of these guys come here contributing. It's not an array of guys that came here to be the, quote, dream team. They're a group of guys that came here to prove that they are a dream team is the way I'm going to put it. We keep talking about this dynasty and building this dynasty. That's what you want. That's what you want. Every team wants to be the Patriots. And you're seeing moves that make sense. We look back to the offseason with Chip Kelly. A lot of those moves were just money moves, sign the flash free agents. Towards the end of the Andy Reid era, you're really throwing at straws. Even in the middle of the Andy Reid era, like, you still, like, T.O. was the only wide receiver you bring in. You were just doing nonsense, making Donovan throw to nobodies. Like, now this team makes sense. Now you have a young quarterback who has all the receivers and tight ends in the world and offensive line in the world to flourish. You have a defense that gets back to the Jim Johnson era Eagles, where you're going to be in the quarterback's face, not via blitzing, but you're going to be in the quarterback's face all game long. Teams in late November and December aren't going to be able to keep up with this Eagles defensive line. Right now, on paper, Lou, this team makes as much sense as they've ever accumulated, in my opinion. I think right now, you can't find a hole. Yes, you can nitpick. You can nitpick anything. You can nitpick any roster. But right now, this Eagles team, on paper, and come the beginning of September, should be a dominant force.
Absolutely, and I think that's a perfect way to wrap up today's edition of the Locked On Eagles podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day. We'll be back tomorrow. We got three more shows this week, as again, 4 to 5 days a week, we are posting your daily Philadelphia Eagles podcast. Locked On Eagles, Louie DiBiase and Gino Camilleri. Follow us on Twitter at Locked On Birds, at DiBiase LOE, and at Gino_LOE. And as always, thank you for downloading, thank you for listening, and let's go, Birds.
Fly, Eagles, fly.